Okay, good evening, everybody. Shalom Aleichem. Thank you so much for joining me together on this really the eve of the most exalted, transcendent day of the year. It's hard to believe, but we find ourselves right now at the final moments before the end of the 40-day period, which began with Rosh Chodesh Elul. And of course, it goes without saying that we are all focused single-mindedly at the moment on Yom Kippur and all that Yom Kippur offers us and all that we can bring to that day. What I'd like to speak about, however, for the next hour or so is not about Yom HaKippur, but actually the day beforehand, really the day in which we find ourselves right now, Erev Yom HaKippur, which is in and of itself a day which has remarkable significance. What I'd like to do is focus first, for the first, let's say, half of this year, on the one mitzvah, the mitzvah of Achilat and Erev Yom Kippur. We will take a look at this from both a technical perspective as well as more of a philosophical one. I'd like to use that as a sort of a launching pad through which we can go ahead and explore not just the Avodah for Erev Yom Kippur per se, but to try to understand what exactly Erev Yom HaKippurim is in comparison to Yom Kippur itself. And perhaps the 2 days together are supposed to enable us to achieve the sort of balanced approach, not only in terms of our tshuva over this period of time, but to help us focus in a very tangible way in the days ahead. So we know, undoubtedly, that there is a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Sometimes when we think about the mitzvah to eat, we think, well, that's no chiddush, because Jews are always obligated to eat. We eat on Shabbos, we eat in Yom Tov, we're always eating. But the truth of the matter is that there is a difference. On Shabbos is a mitzvah to have 3 meals. On Yom Tov is a mitzvah to have meals, but there's not a mitzvah to eat per se. We wouldn't say that if a person walks around the eating on Shabbos that they're necessarily in fulfillment of a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa. This is an idea of oneg Shabbos, which may, in some ways, generate some sort of a chiyuv, or at least a kiyum in a person eating that which he enjoys. But to say that there's a mitzvah to eat, this is something which is very unique, and it's exclusive to Erev Yom Kippur. What is the basis for this idea? What is the makar? So the Gemara in Brachos in source number 2, based on a pasuk in Parshas Emor. The pasuk in source number 1, the pasuk in Parshas Emor, talk about the mitzvah of Yom Kippur. And after the Torah tells us that we have an obligation to go ahead and to fast, to engage in what the Torah calls inui, so then the Torah tells us at the end, Shabbas Shabbaton Hulachem, that Yom Kippur is called a Shabbat Shabbaton, which the Rabban explained means that there is a double Shvisa. There is Shvisa from Halacha as well as Shvisa from that which we normally engage in, which brings us physical pleasure. The Torah tells us that we are to engage in inui when? But Tisha L'Chodesh, on the 9th of the month. So this is what prompts the Gemara in Brachos and elsewhere to say, wait a second. It says the Gemara, do we fast on the 9th of Tishrei? We fast on the 10th of Tishrei. Yom Kippur is not the 9th, it's the 10th. El Lomalach, rather, to teach you that the reason why the Torah tells us that we are to fast, or it sounds as if telling us we should fast on the 9th, is that anybody who eats on the 9th, it's as if he is fasting not just 1 day, but 2 days. That you have the additional kiyum of fasting for 2 days. The Mishnah Berurah over here, it's not on the sheet, but the Mishnah Berurah explains over here that in general we have a principle, lefum tzara agra, right? The Mishnah Navos tells us that it commensurate with the amount of pain and mesiras nefesh that goes into any mitzvah, so that's how much reward we receive. Normally when we eat, it's not something that requires much pain on our part. To the contrary, we're not obligated to eat. We enjoy eating. It's something that we just find to be pleasurable. So the chiddush over here says the Mishnah Berurah is that when a person goes ahead and he eats on Erev Yom Kippur, so he gets not just a mitzvah, but he gets a mitzvah which is ki'ilu misana chivi yasir. In other words, the schai that a person gets for something which is painful and difficult, such as fasting, so the schai for the mitzvah on eating Erev Yom Kippur is so great, it's ki'ilu misana chivi yasir. Now what is the reason for this mitzvah? So the Gemara doesn't tell us. The Gemara just says it's the mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, doesn't tell us the reason. So there are many different explanations. I'm going to try to go through them quickly. And like I said, you will see hopefully a certain evolution over here. We'll start with perhaps the most simple of all. When I say simple, I don't mean simple in terms of the suggestions necessarily, but just in terms of the simplicity of the explanation as opposed to being a little more complex. So Rashi says, very simply, and Rashi had, there are two versions of Rashi. One in the Gemara, then Brachos, and then as well as the Gemara in Yomu, where the Gemara quotes the same drash over there. In Brachos, Rashi says, V'alchi kamakra, hichinu atzmachem b'tshi l'chodesh. The Torah is basically saying, prepare yourself. You should eat on Erev Yom Kippur as preparation for the fast. Now what Rashi doesn't say over here is how is eating on Erev Yom Kippur to be a preparation? So what would you say? How is that? How does that constitute a preparation? It's easier to fast, which Rashi says explicitly in his Perush in Masechus Yoma, in source number 6, Kolomar haskein atzmucha b'tshiv shatucha l'hisanos basar. That when you eat on the 9th of Tishrei, so this will enable you to be able to fast properly, completely, maybe we could even suggest easily, rather comfortably, on Yom Kippur itself. Sometimes you hear people say you should have an easy fast, Tzom Kal. I don't know about you, but sometimes when you hear that, you wonder, I don't know, is that true? Should you have an easy fast? Is that an appropriate thing to think? Is it appropriate to say? Is that the kind of wish that you should offer somebody? You should have an easy fast? So it sounds like from Rashi, even though Rashi doesn't say this explicitly, maybe the answer is yes. The Torah says that you should eat on Erev Yom Kippur so that you should be able to fast on the 10th. Now you could argue Rashi doesn't want it to be an easy fast. He just wants to be able to get through the day. The stakes are very high. You have to fast 24 hours. It's not easy. So Rashi says, better safe than sorry. The Torah says, eat on Erev Yom Kippur, not so the fast should be easy, but just so to be sure you should be able to do it. So this is Rashi's approach. The Rush simile in source number 7 says, Klomer, chinu atzmachem etshi l'chodesh, lehischazeg b'achila u'b'shasiya, kedei shatuch l'usados l'mocha, laharos chibasur shal l'mocha baruchu ali Yisrael. Says the Rush adds a little more to this, and the Bach simile in source number 8 has a very similar idea, that this is a demonstration of Avas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This shows how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes us. And he gives a mashal. You know what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead, and one day of the year he asks us a fast. Right? We know we have numerous fast days throughout the year, but there's really only one day in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning the Torah itself, tells us that we have to fast. Only on Yom Kippur. And you would think that it's only one day a year, what's the big deal? So you should suffer a little bit through it. So here says the Rush and the Bach simile, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to do me a favor, I want you to fast one day, but I don't want it to be hard for you, I don't want it to be such a difficult day, and so therefore, eat a little bit beforehand, and this way you'll be able to find the fast manageable and comfortable. So basically the Rush and Rashi are saying more or less the same thing, that we eat on every Yom Kippur so we can get through the fast comfortably. The Shiboli Aleki quotes the name of Rabbeinu Yishai in source number 9, exactly the opposite pshat. He says, Rabbeinu Yishai Pireish, Yesh lo schar l'achilasok ilu tzivo Hashem, l'sanos chivi asiri, v'nesaneh, that a person has schar for eating on Erev Yom Kippur, as if what? He's fasted for 2 days. O yesh lo ma'ashib ibnei she'ochel yofev Erev Yom HaKippurim, m'sanah, koshelo yinu yivyose. He says exactly the opposite. Maybe the reason is, if it is when you eat a lot before a fast, so then when you come to the fast itself, guess what? It's going to be more difficult. I don't know if this is true, and it may depend from one person to the next. It may depend on what you eat and how much you eat. And I don't know that we can necessarily come to any conclusions over here scientifically. But the Rabbeinu Yishai suggests over here that the eating a lot in Erev Yom Kippur, yeah, it is a fast. It's a preparation for the fast. But not like Rashi and the Rush say, to make it easier, but other rabbis to make it more challenging, make it more difficult. If you eat a lot on Erev Yom Kippur, so it's going to make the fast that much more unbearable. And so therefore, you have over here really two sides of the same coin. Both of them are saying, yeah, it's about preparation, but whereas the Rush and Rashi says it's about making it easier, Rabbi Neshaya says make it a little more challenging, a little more difficult. Torah Tamim actually cites sort of a raya for this idea. He writes in Source number 10, we're not going to go through this whole thing, but it basically quotes that the Gemara in Tanis of Chav Zayin teaches the Anshi Mishmo Shebemikdosh Lo Yimasana Be'echad B'Shabbos. That we know that Anshi Mishmo used to observe a fast, but they would not do it Be'echad B'Shabbos, they wouldn't do it on Sunday. And he goes on to explain, because when you fast the day after you had a lot to eat, it makes the fast that much more painful, that much more difficult. And obviously people tend to eat more on Shabbos than they knew during the week, and so therefore the Anshi Mishmo would not fast on Sunday, because the fact that they ate the day beforehand would make the fast that much more difficult. So we have this idea that when you eat a lot before a fast, it's actually going to make the fast more challenging. Okay, so now we've seen two explanations as to why we eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Let's look for another explanation. What else could be? So the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, quotes two possible reasons. The first one is a fascinating idea. Rabbeinu Yonah says, when you think about it, Yom Kippur is a Yom Tif. And what do we do on every Yom Tif? We eat. This is one of the ways that we fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tif is by eating. And Yom Kippur is a Yom Tif. We don't always think about it in that way, but it really is. In fact, the Mishnah Tanis tells us, Lo hayu yamim tovim l'Yisrael, chamisha asar avik yom kippurim. The Yom Kippur is considered to be not just any Yom Tif, but it's considered to be, literally, according to the Mishnah, one of the greatest yamim tovim, one of the greatest days of the entire year. And so therefore, naturally, if it's Yom Tif, we should eat. There's only one problem. The Torah says you can't eat. So what do? So it says, Rabbeinu Yonah, we eat the day beforehand. And by eating the day beforehand, in a sense, we are mekayim, we are fulfilling the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tif, the eating that would have taken place on Yom Kippur, where not, in fact, the Torah says you have to fast. So we fulfill that element of Simchas Yom Tif by eating the day beforehand. So argues Rabbeinu Yonah, and he has... I read the pshat out of order. So that was the second pshat. In case you happen to be looking for that and you didn't see it, that's on the top of the next page. But before you turn the page, if you look on the bottom of here, in source number 11, he writes an interesting idea. That when a person goes ahead and he does an aveira, and then he does tshuva, yidag la'avono, yichsov yechake legil yom ha-kippurim, l'man yisratzeh, Al Hashem Yisbarach. So a person is going to be concerned and anxious. He wants to make it to Yom Kippur so he knows that his atonement has been complete. You know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts his tshuva. Ki ritzon chai nefesh ve'guf chai kol notzer. Because you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to succeed. He wants us to return and to do tshuva. V'akein amru chazal. Chazal have said, kol ha-kovei asudu be'ev yom ha-kippurim. Ki ilu netztavi l'sanos tshivi asir. Why? Ki heres simchaso b'giyaz man kavaraso. Says Rabbeinu Yonah that when a person eats on Erev Yom Kippur, you know what it shows? It shows that he's so eager to do tshuva, he's so excited about the kapara that Yom Kippur offers him. It's very interesting. But again, hopefully this also sort of helps prepare our mindset. When we sit at the Suda tomorrow, and we are sitting there, and we are engaged in a Suda that of course is, it's not quite like a Suda's Purim. It's not festive in that way, but it's a moment of anxiety. It's a moment of a bit of tension. There's a certain COVID rosh that we feel, but we also feel like what's it like anticipation and excitement. We feel anxious in a positive way that we are finally coming to the Yom HaGadol VaNorav HaKadosh of Yom HaKippurim, which is going to offer us Slicha Mechil VaKaparo. So that's something that we look forward to, and we celebrate that by eating. Rabbeinu Yonah, again, on the top of the next page, on the second pshat, says what I said first, namely, that this is our way of fulfilling the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. So how many explanations we've seen so far? We've seen Rashi in the Rush, we've seen Rabbeinu Yishayat, we've seen two pshatim in Rabbeinu Yonah. What else do we see over here? Another possibility, Yishiboli Aleke quotes in source number 13 from his brother, Rabbi Yamin, that apparently the tzedukim would fast not only on Yom Kippur, not only on the 10th of Tishrei, but they would fast on the 9th as well. Why? Because when they came to that same pasuk that we read beforehand, the first source on this source sheet, so they learned it literally. They said, oh, the Torah is telling us that we should fast not just on the 10th, but on the 9th as well. That was what the tzedukim say. So therefore, Chazal instituted Lahotzi Milibin Shal Tzedukin in order to go ahead and to show that's not true, that they don't know how to learn properly, that that's not what it is. So Chazal Darshanet Lehefech, that we have an obligation to go ahead and to eat and drink. Just thinking aloud with you right now, I know this bothered me beforehand, but I'm wondering, generally do we say that there are mitzvos min haTorah that are instituted, that are there, Lahotzi Milibon Shal Tzedukin? I don't know. Generally when we talk about mitzvos, they're like mitzvos derabanan. But can anybody think of any other mitzvos that are there from the Torah in order to go ahead? So generally we assume that this is a mitzvah d'oraisa, right? The Sefer HaChinuch, other money and mitzvahs count this as a mitzvah d'oraisa. So it's an interesting pshat to say that we would, yeah.
Maybe saying that Chazal are emphasizing so much that it's ki'ilu that you fasted, the mitzvah of the Torah is just to eat. And on the ninth day, but he's trying to answer why is there such a big emphasis on it.
Oh, very interesting. All right, it's not the reason for the mitzvah per se, but the reason why Chazal stressed the importance of this mitzvah. And it's ki'ilu, you fasted 2 days, and say no. If you eat, then it's ki'ilu, you fasted 2 days. But not if you fast for 2 days. Very nice. Okay, very good, Shkai. Yep.
I forgot exactly what it was. I think your chef did mention
that there are other mitzvahs. And even a mitzvah minatar is there, lahotz milimon. Okay. All right, very good. So we've now seen, I don't know, five, I think, if I'm correct, we have five different pshatim as to what is the reason as to why we fast on Erev Yom Kippur. Now the question is, lamai nafkamina, does it really matter what the reason is? And the answer, of course, it matters. So I'll share with you now several nafkaminas, and then I'm just going to tell you what we're going to do. We're going to see several nafkaminas, and we're going to see some more, I don't want to say more profound, but some a little more complex explanations. And then I'd like to spend the last segment, the last half of this year or so, talking about a particular halach that I'd like to present to you. So the Ksav Sofer asks an interesting question. He says, what is the din regarding a person who, lo leinu, was a chole, who is not able to fast on Yom Kippur? Unfortunately, this is not unheard of. It's not necessarily the most common situation. Most of us, hopefully, are healthy enough to be able to fast on Yom Kippur. But this is not like a one-in-a-million situation. There are people, unfortunately, who, because of their physical state, are not able to fast on Yom Kippur. So a person's going into Yom Kippur saying, I know I'm not going to be able to fast. So the question is, does this person have a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? So the shal is this person going to fast? If you can't fast on Yom Kippur, obviously you're not going to fast on Erev Yom Kippur. The question is, should you go out and eat more? The doctor says, I can't fast, but he doesn't care how much I eat. So would such a person who knows, I cannot fast on Yom Kippur, would he have an obligation to go out of his way to eat more than he normally would in order to fulfill the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur? This is the shal of Ksav Sofer, and maybe you could say that it depends on this question, as what is the reason as to why we fast on Erev Yom Kippur. If you say that the reason is because it is a chana for the fast itself, either like the Rashi and the Rush, who say that it's to make the fast easier, or like Rabbeinu Shai, you say it's to make the fast more difficult, but according to these Mefarshim, we fast on Erev Yom Kippur in order to what? To prepare for the fast. Well, if the whole reason why you're eating is to prepare, well, if you're not going to fast anyway, so there's no need to prepare. On the other hand, if you say no, it's not about preparation for the fast, but it's to highlight a certain feature, either my anticipation of the day of Yom Kippur, as Rabbeinu Yonah says, or as Rabbeinu Yonah says, because there's an element of Simchas Yom Tov in Yom Kippur. So according to these explanations, maybe you could argue no, that even such an individual who can't fast on Yom Kippur is still able to fulfill the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. Another possibility, sort of the opposite extreme, the Tzvi Pesach Frank in the Sefer Mekorei Kodesh, source number 15, he talks about, what about a person who knows for sure that he will be able to fast fine? How does he know? He's a good faster. He says on the bottom over here, L'fisa misha daito baro sheyuchal usanos afil lo yochav Erev Yom Kippurin, he suggests the possibility that according to, let's say, Rashi, who says that the purpose of eating on Erev Yom Kippur is in order to prepare for the fast, to make it easier, if you know, how would you know again? You fast many occasions, you go, you don't eat that much to begin with, and you don't need to eat on Erev Yom Kippur in order to be able to get through the day. So if you have that certainty, so maybe there is no mitzvah for such an individual. So entertains the Tzvi Pesach Frank that possibility. Another famous question of Rabbi Akiva Eiger is, are women obligated in this mitzvah? Are women obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? So on the one hand, maybe we'd say no, because it's a mitzvah sensations mind drama, so nashim would be paturos. That would be the first assumption we would make. Upon further reflection, however, maybe you could say no, because just like Lamashal we say when it comes to Shabbos, I mean, over there it's a drusha, so it's a little more, it's not a svara. Shama v'zachar. So we know that any mishi yeshno b'shmira, yeshno zechira, that women who are obligated in the mitzvahs lo saseh of Shabbos are obligated in the mitzvahs saseh as well. But here we could say more misvara, that anybody who is obligated to fast on Yom Kippur, and of course women are, so they should also be obligated to eat, because after all, it's a preparation for the fast. So mameila, they have to prepare like everybody else. It's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Yeah, but it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama that's inherently connected to a mitzvah that they're obligated to do. So this is another possible nafkamina. Another interesting discussion, the Milchas Chinah has a discussion about whether you have to have bread and what the shir of achil is, and the Menashe Klein, the Mishnah Halacha, source number 18, wants to know whether there's a mitzvah chinuch when it comes to this mitzvah. Fascinating question. Should we be mechanich children? So children who are not going to be fasting, So is there an inyon to be mechanech them to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? Again, of course the kids are going to eat. But we say to them, come here, Tata Lisha, we're going to eat a little more today because it's a mitzvah. Is there an inyon of chinuch when it comes to a mitzvah that really, it's not so shaykh to him because he's not going to be fasting on Erev Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur itself. So that's, you know, there's either some several possible nafkaminas. Now what I'd like to do is I want to share with you some other explanations as to why possibly there's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So one fascinating approach is found in the Sefer Harei Kedem, source number 19. This is, of course, the Torah of Rav Soloveitchik. So the Rav Zatzal said the following. He quotes from the Rambam. Let's read this inside. If you see in the fifth line, in source number 19, he quotes the Lashon of the Rambam in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Shvisas Asar. Mitzvah saseh acheres yesh b'yom ha-kippurim, v'hi lishbos bo me'achila u'shasiyah. The Rambam, and I referred to this a little bit earlier when I said Shabbat, Shabbaton. So the Rambam also says a similar idea that the double Shvisa. So the Rambam says, what is the Shvisa of Yom Kippur? So first is Shvisas Malacha, which we always have on Shabbos and Yom Tov. However, he says there's another mitzvah Shvisa, and that is Shvisa Me'achila. Now that's an interesting formulation, right? We don't normally think of a fast as being Shvisa Me'achila. But that's the way the Rambam understands it. He said the Torah tells us that we should be shoves, we should rest, we should desist from the normal manner of eating, or the normal, you know, activity of eating. Vimkeni says, Nira the mehai time chayv lechol erev yom kippurim kidei lishbos yom kippurim shvisa hanikeres meachilu shasiyah. The main ochel of yom kippurim main kan shvisa nikeres. How are you shoves in a way in which it's nikar, it's obvious that you're doing something? Because by definition, shvisa is something which is passive. So how is our shvisa, let's say shvisa is melacha on Shabbos nikar? It's nikar because we work 6 days a week. So if you work 6 days a week, so then your shvisa is melacha on Shabbos is evident. It's nikeres because after all, it's different than every other day. So how is it nikar that I am fasting on Yom Kippur? After all, you know, you can't tell that a person is fasting when they're not eating. Unless, if you go out of your way to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, and you're eating more than you usually do, so the contrast between the 2 days creates a shvisa nikeres. So that's a very interesting lumdish idea over here brought down in the Sefer Harerei Kedem. Another possibility, this is like really fascinating, now we're getting to a little more, I would say a little more philosophical. Pardes Yosef quotes an amazing idea over here, source number 20. He says, the famous Gemara in Krisus Tavav, which tells Kol Tanis She'inbo Miposhi Yisrael Einu Tanis. We know that Chazal tell us that every Tanis has to include Poshe Yisrael, right? All the sinners of Israel. Lefizeh b'yom ha-kippurim she'tole kol kaparas b'nei Yisrael ulai Poshe Yisrael lo yisanu. Yom Kippur is the most important fast of the day, of the year. This is the fast in which all of Klal Yisrael's kapara is dependent on this fast, and oy, it is possible that there will be Poshe Yisrael who are not going to fast on Yom Kippur. V'atanis lo yatanis. And if that's true, then it's not going to be a complete Tanis for Klal Yisrael. This Tanis requires Poshe Yisrael. Lachain, this is wild. Chidshu Chazal she'achila b'erev Yom Kippurim lo shavi ki'ilu v'sanu chi v'rak kamo she'sanu gam kein b'asiri. It's not just like you fasted on Erev Yom Kippur. No, it's like you fasted on Yom Kippur as well. B'meila Poshe Yisrael yeh b'chlal Tanis Yom HaKippurim. So therefore, the Poshe Yisrael who eat on Erev Yom Kippur, they're also included in the Tanis. The heim yochlu b'tishu b'birum emeila havi ki'ilu v'shtatsu p'tanis yom ha-kippurim v'achilas erev yom kippurim osu sh'tanis asiri yatanis tova amiti v'shayach loma ki'ilu v'sana chivi asiri. Unbelievable idea. I mean, this is obviously more than just a limud chus on Poshe Yisrael. This is like a big pat on the back. Thank you so much. Thank you for eating on Erev Yom Kippur. By doing so, you have therefore been mitzarif with the rest of Klal Yisrael in our tanis of Yom Kippur. And now everybody's included. Those who are fasting, and those of Olenu who are not fasting, even the Poshe Yisrael will eat on Yom Kippur. That's a real level of Pshia. Even they are included in our Tanis because they ate on every Yom Kippur. It's a wild idea. The next idea, which is brought, we're not going to read inside, but if you take a look, you'll enjoy on your own, the Shalom and the Oroch Laner, coming from two different places, but a very similar idea. This is also an idea that probably can be developed a lot further, but they both explain that, of course, when we speak about Inui, when you speak about affliction, so there are two types of affliction. There's affliction of the guf, and there's affliction of the neshama. So when we speak about v'nisem es nafsho seichem, don't be thrown off by the word nefesh over there. When the Torah says nafsho seichem, it very often doesn't mean your soul as much as it means your body. Perhaps it's not necessarily a raya, chrechus, but you know, what's the pasuk which we often quote, which shows that we have to take care of our physical health? Mishmarta Ma'od, the Nafshel Seichem. Right? You should take care of your, or if you translate that, your souls. It's sort of ironic that the pasuk that says that we're supposed to take care of our bodies. So Nafshel Seichem doesn't necessarily mean souls. So over here, the Torah says, "V'nisim as Nafshel Seichem, inoy leguf." They say this is how we are. This is how we afflict our body, which is a way of being mechaper. It's a way of sort of purging, being metayer the body for sins that the body has committed. But you know what? The body is not the only partner in sin. The neshama is also part of that process. In fact, the famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, which tells us that both the guf and the neshama on the Yom HaDin, they're going to try to, you know, get out of, try to escape prosecution. By the guf says, it's not my fault, the neshama's fault. The neshama says, it's not my fault, the guf's fault. Because Shmuel puts them together and says, no, the guf and the neshama biyachad, you're going to face judgment. So the inui of Yom Kippur is the inui of guf, and the eating on Erev Yom Kippur, so that is inui l'neshama. Very profound idea, because the neshama doesn't like food. Anything which is worldly, anything which is physical, is something which is antithetical to, on a certain level, to the pure spiritual nature of the soul. And so therefore, just like fasting on Yom Kippur is inui l'guf, eating on Erev Yom Kippur is inui l'soul. That's the pshat of the Shalom Erech L'ner. Take a look at the next top of the next page, source number 23. This is a beautiful mahalich from Rav Sternbach. I remember when I don't know why, but I happen to remember Mo'ad Mizman is one of the first Achronos Sfarim that I ever purchased, that I owned. I bought it when I was still in high school. I don't know why I bought it, but you know, I was probably in a Sfarim store and it looked like a nice set, and I figured, hey, why not? So it was a good pick for me at the time. Just I remember there were several pieces, even when I was high school and I was not necessarily sitting and learning all day, but that made a real impression on me. I remember to this very day. I think one of the first pieces that I ever learned was this piece, and it remained with me, therefore, and I was absolutely misspelled at the time by this idea from Rav Sternbach. Mm-hmm. And Rav Sternbach basically points out that this idea of eating on the Erev of Atanis is unique to Yom Kippur. We don't find that there's an inyu by the other fast. He says, of course, there's no issur to eat Erev Tisha B'Av. You can eat Erev Tisha B'Av, but we certainly don't see that there's an inyu to go out of your way to eat beforehand. And especially, I don't know if he makes this point, but I will, but especially in light of Rashi's pshat, that the reason we eat on Erev Yom Kippur is so you can get through the fast, you would think that there would also be an inyan to eat on Erev Tisha B'Av so we can get through the fast as well. We don't find that. So he says the following idea. He says the reason is because when it comes to the other fast days, all the fasts which are associated with Churban Beis HaMikdash in some way, so over there, the goal of the fast is to make you uncomfortable. And that will force you to what? To engage in tshuva. You'll be machnir yourself more, because after all, the fast is painful. However, he says, be finish, that's not true when it comes to Tisha B'Av. Oh, excuse me, Yom Kippur. When it comes to Yom Kippur, the reason we fast is not so we should be in pain. In fact, the ideal would be you don't think about food once. The reason we fast is because on Yom Kippur, we're domal ha-malachim. And our abstention from worldly distractions during the, not only eating and drinking, but all of the inuyim, b'chitza, from anything which is shaltana, tashma shamita, this is all about withdrawal from the physical world, that at least for 24 hours, because we can't do it much longer than that, we're done with malachim. We come, we stand the whole day, we're white, but you've heard everything. So, you know, there are a lot of things that we do with the domal malachim on Yom Kippur, excuse me. So, that's why the Torah says we should eat beforehand. We should eat beforehand because the goal would be that you don't feel the fast at all. He doesn't talk about this over here, but of course this touches upon, all of this really touches upon a famous discussion among the poskim as to whether or not a person can do something before the fast other than eat, which will alleviate the discomfort associated with the fast. So for centuries now, they've been around for at least a couple of centuries, but there was a pill that was introduced into the market more recently than that, within the last 10 years or so. I think it's actually called the Tzom Kal pill. I don't know if it's available here in this country. But, what? No. So, Tzom Kal. So, some guy in Israel, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's some sort of time-release capsule, and it, you know, releases certain chemicals, certain nutrients, something into the body, which alleviates the discomfort associated with the fast. So the question is it okay to do that? Obviously, you take it before Yom Kippur. Is it mutter to do that? So this was a discussion. Some poskim felt that it was absolutely permissible. Others felt that it was absolutely usur. And others felt that it was mutter, minadin, but it's just not right. It's not right. Rav Sternbach, presumably, I don't know this for sure, presumably would say it's a good idea. Because the way he presents it over here, the idea would be don't be hungry at all. Therefore, eat on Erev Yom Kippur so you can actually sort of enjoy the day as a malach, not thinking about food at all. Getting now to the final pshat that I'm going to present to you before my own pshat that I want to suggest humbly. Before we get there, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, source number 24. This is a very, very nice piece. We're not going to read the whole thing inside, but he makes a very nice presentation over here, reminding us that what was the very first aveira that was ever committed in the history of the world? It was, of course, the aveira of Achilas, the pre-Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, the Achila. The first aveira that was committed by Chava, by Adam, was aveira that involved eating. And therefore, he says that this was not just the first, but this, he says, is Rosh L'chol Avono Sh'aleinu L'saki. This is really sort of the paradigmatic sin. The paradigm of all sin was this, the first, what some call the original sin. This was a sin that really we continue to sort of suffer from the results of Ad Hayom Hazeh. And so therefore, when we try on Yom Kippur to sort of restore everything, not only with our own personal lives, but in a more collective sense, and not only in terms of our family, our community, and Klal Yisrael, but universally, all of mankind, so we try to go back to the scene of the crime. You should see the way he explains it very, very nicely, based on the Rambam, who tells us that a Baal Teshuva is only Baal Teshuva if he's in the same place, the same temptations, and he's able to overcome it. So essentially, he suggests over here that the idea of eating on Erev Yom Kippur is a way of demonstrating that we can eat properly. It's a way of showing that we know how to eat within the confines of the law. That we can eat in a way in which it's a mitzvah and not by stepping outside of the permissible limitations of the law and violating Isuri Achila. And based on this, in the Sefer Hagyonei Halacha, Rav Mirsky in source number 25, they actually suggest that it's possible that this explains why in general throughout the Aser Shemei Tshuva there seems to be a focus on eating in a more in a way that's more, that we're more medakik than we normally are. Normally, as you know, most people are not makbid necessarily on Pas Yisrael, but the Mechaber, of course, from the tour, which is based on the Yerushalmi, this idea that during Aser Shemei Tshuva, so we try to accept upon ourselves chumers when it comes to eating. Some only drink Chol Yisrael during Aser Shemei Tshuva. Certain chumers when it comes to Achila Dafka. Why is that? So Rav Mirsky suggests it's also related to this. And he even says, it'll be very interesting, the Minhag Yerushalayim, that they would eat on Erev Yom Kippur, they would eat raisins. Why raisins, Dafka? So I always thought the reason they had raisins is because it's just, you could just keep popping them in your mouth all day, and this way, you know, you're just fulfilling mitzvahs all day. Right? It's sort of, I think, maybe easy, light on the stomach and the small. So he suggests over here, the Medrash tells us the other Marishon, what was the chait of the, it wasn't an apple, right? There are four different explanations of the Gemara. One is that it was grapes. So he says, maybe, connected to Ochlim Simuki Anavim, L'shem Mitzvah. Very interesting idea. Yeah. Okay. All right. So with that introduction, I timed it almost perfectly. So almost a little more than halfway through. I'm not going to hold you longer, of course. But I want to suggest another possible mahalich as to why it is that we eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Why do we eat on Erev Yom Kippur? So this is based on perhaps some of the most famous psukim that we visit this time of year, and we revisit them. It works out very well because it's from the Parsha Shavuot and it's from Vayelech, and so therefore we always read it before and the week of before Yom Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur. But I have a feeling that even if we read the Pesukim in the middle of January, we'd also be quoting from the Pesukim because they're really very much Menyona Dioma. The Torah says, Ki ha-mitzvah azos asher anochi mitzavcho hayom. We know there's a famous machlokes, Rashi and the Ramban, what mitzvah this is referring to, but probably because of the timing of the year, we always prefer the Ramban's pshat, so to speak. I prefer it, not that we prefer it in any fundamental way, of course. Rashi's pshat works very well also. But over here, as far as the mitzvah of the day, the mitzvah's tshuva, so the Ramban says, this mitzvah, lo nifleisi mimchava lo rechoki. This mitzvah, it's not so wondrous, it's not out of reach, it's not so far from you. Lo b'shamayim hi. It's not in the heavens, lemor, that you should say, miyalu lanu ha-shamayim avi kocheho lanu v'yashmienu osa v'nasena. If it was in the Shemaim, you'd say, who can go to the heavens? How can I possibly ascend the heavens in order to retrieve this great thing? The Torah tells us that this mitzvah tshuva is lach Hashemayim. It's not meivel yom. It's right here. So close to me. Through vidui, tshuva, belave, la selsa, I can do it. It's something that I can do. It doesn't require all that much. If I'm willing, I'm committed to the process. Now, typically, and I'm not suggesting that we don't learn the psukim this way. When we learn these psukim, so the way we understand it is that if in fact we're talking about tshuva, the point that the Torah is making over here is that the process of tshuva is not so difficult, right? Sometimes people think, I've been doing avers my whole life, so how could I possibly go ahead and now suddenly fix it now? It's too much of a mess, I can't possibly clean it up. Comes along the Torah and says, no, don't worry, you can do it. So in other words, the Torah is encouraging us to move forward and not be overwhelmed by the prospect of tshuva and realize that the process is more attainable than you may think it is. And that is true. But I would like to suggest that it's possible that the Torah is saying something else in addition. And that is that not necessarily in terms of the process, but rather the objective of tshuva. What is it maybe that keeps people, that maybe creates certain inhibitions or would make somebody hesitate to do tshuva? Not because they think that it's not attainable, but they're afraid of what they're going to look like when it's all over. Because if I really, really do tshuva, and I really turn myself around, and I become transformed into a new person, as the Rambam says is the goal of tshuva, so then who am I going to be? I'm going to, forgive the expression because I don't like it, I'm going to flip out, and then I'm going to have to live b'shamayim. I'm going to have to live me'er l'yom. I'm going to have to leave my family, not necessarily literally, but I'm going to have to completely change my life radically. And that's intimidating, that's overwhelming, and that's the kind of thing that makes a lot of people perhaps pause and wonder, is this really something I want to do? And maybe the Torah is saying, no, lo b'shamayim hi. Ki ha-mitzvah zos, the mitzvah tshuva, is not a call for us to go ahead and pack up our bags and move to the Shemayim. And it's not even asking us to go me'er l'yom. Ki kavur karu alecha davar ma'od. You can actually access and you can actually enter and maybe even complete the process of tshuva and still be more or less in the same place and space where you were beforehand. So how so? So if you take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Deos in the third chapter, so the Rambam presents an idea over here which I'm sure you're all familiar with, either from the Rambam or just in general, undoubtedly you've encountered ideas like this. I'll just say a little outside and we'll look a little bit inside. The Rambam basically points out over here that everything that we do in the world can be done and should be done l'shem shemayim. And there are times where people, they almost live like a split life. There's like my Torah life, where I'm in the Beis Medrash, and then when I'm out of the Beis Medrash. I don't mean to suggest that a person is mamish, like living as a double personality, that he's in Beis Medrash, he's learning, and when he's outside, he's doing all sorts of avayers. No, but we don't necessarily view what we're doing outside, eating and exercising and socializing and interacting with friends and with family, we don't view that as being an act of Avodas Hashem. And the Rambam sort of redirects us to say, to realize that that's not necessarily so. He writes, a person should try to focus all of his energies and his actions, his thoughts and his actions, that everything should be to one ultimate goal. So Kate said, what do I mean, says the Rambam? When a person goes to work, so he does this to get paid. He shouldn't say, I want to get paid so I have money. A person should say, I want to be able to earn money so that I can go ahead and provide for myself and my family, and so that I should be ultimately able to serve Hashem. As it says in the next halacha, a person goes ahead and he follows whatever the doctors say. So he's very health conscious. In some alibo, she a kol gufei varv shleim and bavad. If his idea is, I just want to be healthy, and I want my children to be healthy, I want to be able to go to work, ein zol derech tova. That's not the ideal state, says the Rambam. El yasim alibo she a gufei shleim v'chazek v'chazak kedei shetia nafsho yeshara l'dasas Hashem. I should be able to achieve a state of health and balance in my life so that I could serve Hashem properly. A person can't properly serve Hashem if he doesn't feel well. I should want to have children, not so somebody could inherit the family business, maybe my son will become a Chacham God of Yisrael. Nimtza Mahalik, but there is a koyam of Odes Hashem Tamid. Says the Rambam, if a person can live life like this, so then he's always being Odes Hashem. Not just when he's in the Beis Medrash, not just at certain moments in his life, not just on Yom Kippur, but at all moments in life, he could serve Hashem. And if you skip to the last lines, Nimtza Shenishal, even his sleep, says the Rambam, is Avodas Lamakam Baruch Hu. If a person goes to sleep consciously, what does it mean, sleep consciously? It means you go to sleep at certain times, with a certain, you set your alarm. It's part of a plan. You don't just like fall asleep. I mean, it happens sometimes. You're allowed to fall asleep, but even the sleep is part of my overall schedule. It's planned. So then, even my sleep becomes about this Malkam Baruch Hu. Vayin zeh tzivu chachamim, and they have said kol masecha yud l'shem shemayim. And this is what Shlomo HaMelech meant when he said, "B'chol d'rochecha da'ehu v'hu yasher achosecha, b'chol d'rochecha da'ehu." That through all of one's ways, they could come to understand and to know and to connect closer with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shulchan Aruch and Arachayim Simen Reish Lamed Aleph. Similarly, bolded on the bottom, "Klolo shel davar, chayiv adam l'sum eino v'libo al d'rocha v'lishko komasa b'mazneh sichlo." Every time a person encounters a certain decision, say, is this something which brings me close to the Ribbono Shel Olam? If the answer is yes, good. And the answer is no, then don't do it. Now, the Mechaber doesn't give us examples over here. So it would be presumptuous of me to say that if the Mechaber is sitting here right now, and we say, what about this? What about this? He would necessarily agree with all of our Cheshbonos. But I mentioned exercise beforehand. I'll just say in a more general sense, leisurely activities. Is it a mitzvah for a person to go ahead and to exercise, to play ball? So objectively speaking, say no. And you'd probably be correct. However, when it's a certain context, if it's a person who's engaged in certain activities, such as ones I mentioned, another one, I would say maybe others which are perhaps even a little more controversial, not necessarily sinful, but things that maybe seem like a little more like a waste of time, but if it helps a person achieve a certain measure of healthy balance in his life, so he could say emotionally calm and stable and be physically balanced and healthy, and this is all part of, a plan in life, which is going to bring me forward, enable me to grow as a Ben Torah, so then, b'chol d'rochecha da'ehu. So then, that's what it means, kol ma'asecha yud l'shem shemayim. It's not, as going back to what I said before, the goal of tshuva is not lo b'shemayim. It's not that we should be able to live a life where we are living in Shemayim, but even living here in this world. I once heard a very nice pshat, very nice idea. You know that there's a minhag we have that on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the Shliach Tzibur for Shachar starts at his seat. Right? He starts at Melech at his seat, and then he walks over to the Yamad. Strange, unusual. Why is that done? So I heard, I don't remember where I heard this, forgive me, so I don't know what I would include it, but it's not my idea. It's a nice idea that maybe it's a way of demonstrating that you don't have to be standing at the Amud in order to be close with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not that only the guy standing up front, at the Bima. No. That it's Lo B'Shemayim. Wherever you are in the pews, you're sitting all the way in the back, far right. That's okay. Even from that place, you could say Hamelech, and even from there, a person could come to this place where he connects with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a very nice pshat from the Chafetz Chaim, his perush on the Torah. So, the famous first encounter between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is recorded in Parsha Shmos. So Moshe, of course, sees the sneh. The Torah tells us he sees the sneh, which is on fire, but it's not being consumed. One of the very first words that Hashem says to Moshe, first it says, Moshe, Moshe, v'yomer neni, v'yomer al tikra v'alom. Don't walk anymore. Shal na'alecha mi'araglecha, ki ha'mokom ashto omen lo v'alem eskodeshu. Take your shoes off. Imagine the first things that Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, take your shoes off because you're standing on holy ground. Says the Chafetz Chaim, this is so powerful. B'chol makom v'chol zman yachol adam l'skar v'alboro. A person can come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam anywhere, anytime. L'avdo l'kayim mitzvosav. A love rak l'hashkiach shlo yedavar chotzeiz ben olav en HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the person has to do is to see to it that there is nothing which is chotzeitz, which separates between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. K'mamar kasuv ki avonoseichem avdilim. Like the pasuk says that my sins are mavdil, they separate between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Zeh Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. That's why Hashem says the first things that Hashem says is shal na'alechem yarag, take your shoes off. Klomar zakuk kato lasiros amachitzam avdelas ben chovin amokam ashtot ha'omid olav. You are standing, you don't realize it, but you're standing right now in Advas Kodesh. And all you need to do in order to appreciate that is to remove that which is separating you. Ki b'chol ha-mokom asher azki yashmi kodeshu, elu shetzorach la'asir ha-mesach ha-madil, v'atom she-yamim rishonim ha-yitov me'ere. We say, no, no, it used to be better. That was only in the days of the Tanoim, the Amoroim, and the Rishonim, and not for us. No. Ki lo m'chokma shalta azev, v'chol azim chayv lomar, matai yagiyu ma'asai la'masai avaseinu, hachilu k'rak ba'ovi ha-machitzam. That was the only difference is how thick is the separation, the barriers. Aval imrak masirim oso, azay miskale amokom b'chol zohar kedush oso, v'yifas oro, ke'ed zakosav ki amokom asher ato omen alav. B'loshon hu, klom b'chol amokom b'chol zman kodeshu, elu tzach l'kayim es shal nam lechu raglecha. The Torah is saying, kol amokom asher ato omen alav. Wherever you're standing, kodeshu. Wherever you're standing can be amokom kodesh. It doesn't have to be some special time and special place. Again, going back to what I said before, lo b'shamayimi. Those have to be b'shamayim. I can't get there. It's not the right time, not the right place. No. All you need to do is remove the mechitzim avdeles, the shal na'alecha, mi'ahu raglecha. So said the Chafetz Chaim, a very beautiful idea. I once heard a very nice idea. I hope I say this over properly. I heard this years ago from a close friend of mine, Rabbi Moshe Benovitz, who has actually since become my mechutin, but I heard this from him before he's my mechutin. And he quoted Rav Mirsky, who I quoted earlier in the Sefer HaGeonei Halacha, but he quoted him in a shir that he heard, so I have never seen this in writing. Mirsky has a very interesting question. I know that it's not even Yom Kippur yet, but I'm going to give you a nice point that you could use on Sukkot also, but it fits very nicely with this. Mirsky has a very interesting question, which I think the Gemara sort of deals with, but Rav Mirsky addresses it in somewhat of a different way. That means we know that we take the Dalet Binim on Sukkot, but we make the bracha dafka on the lulav, right? Which is a little strange. We should make a bracha on all the dalet minim. Hashem Shabbos Zvano Alatilas dalet minim. Well, Alatilas esrog. Why dafka the lulav? Why is the lulav the one that is singled out? So he suggests a very interesting idea. And he says, what is the main difference between an esrog and a lulav? So he says that the esrog and lulav lie on opposite ends of the spectrum as far as maintenance is concerned. Esrog requires perfect conditions, sun and water, constant tipul, and that's why it's so difficult to find a perfect esrog. That's why people spend a lot of money for an esrog. However, lulav requires very little cultivation. You see palm trees everywhere, even in places where people don't want them to be. And you see the way Loleno recently sent a lot of examples of the way these trees, they sway in the wind, and the trees are going, the wind's going this way, that way, 100, 150 miles an hour, and it's just swaying and moving, and it's still standing. Because the way Ramirsky said, apparently, the lulav is not such a mufunak. He's pretty flexible, literally. It is flexible. It's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought about it until I said it. It's flexible. It's not so rigid. So he says the difference between the esrog and the lulav reflects two modes of our avodas Hashem, two modes of tshuva. Esrog, we'll say, is like the Yom Kippur mode. It requires perfect condition. Tshuva cultivated on the most sterile conditions, separating ourselves from our surroundings, complete immersion. And if we are successful during the Aseres Metshuva, so we come to Yom Kippur and we create essentially a temporary greenhouse. We protect ourselves from potentially harmful elements, maintaining complete control of exposure and nutrients. That's beautiful. There's only one problem. It's really hard to maintain that. It requires a lot of effort and it's almost impossible to sustain that throughout the year. The lulav is a different type of tshuva. That's the tshuva of Erev Yom Kippur. That's even without all those other conditions. Lulav, again, is not as picky. It can basically grow and develop in all conditions. It doesn't require perfect environment, perfect conditions to thrive. So Mercy suggests maybe that's why we emphasize the lulav through the bracha. Because on Sukkot, we're trying to essentially take Yom Kippur with us. Right? Of course, there's an obvious connection between Sukkot, which comes right after the Yom HaRayim. So we're trying to take the lessons of the Mi'at Tshuva with us. And we do so, obviously, in the Sukkah, first and foremost. But the Dalet Minim, to a certain extent as well, are supposed to help us accomplish that goal. And by taking the Dalet Minim and focusing on the Lulav, we're reminding ourselves that the spiritual growth that we've achieved during the Aseres Metshuva, which were sort of this ideal, unsustainable state, doesn't require the perfect conditions in order to be able to continue. We can continue to grow, and we can continue to thrive even when we leave the Kedusha of Yom Kippur. Just a couple more points before I conclude. Just another really nice idea. Rav Shlomo Zevin and the Sefer LaTorah LaMa'adim, so he has a tremendous ha'ara. He points out that, you know, that the Torah tells us, of course, that Aaron, we're going to read this on Yom Kippur, that the Kohen Gadol, he makes several trips to the Kodesh Kedashim, and before he does so, he changes his clothing for the Big Day Love, Big Day Zav to Big Day Lavan, and before he changes the Big Day Lavan, he goes to the mikveh. And why does he do so? He does so because he's going, presumably, from a lower Kedusha to a higher Kedusha, so he has to go to the mikveh beforehand. But then, if you look, Rashi tells us that there are Chamesh Tvilos, because he doesn't only go to the mikveh when he goes in, he also goes to the mikveh when he comes out. So Zevin asks an interesting question. I understand why Kohen Gadol goes to the mikveh when he's going from his Big Day Zav to his Big Day Lavan. He's going from the outside, from the Heichal, into the Kodesh Kedashim. That makes sense. However, when he's going from the Kodesh Kedashim to the Heichal, so he's going down a level. He's going from a higher Kedusha to a lower Kedusha. Why does he go to the mikveh then? So it says, Rav Zevin, if you take a look at the last few lines here, in source number 35, he says, no. Elishim kol Kedusha ha'gdolo shel lefnayv lefnim, hinei mebechines acheres, yesh tosefes Kedusha davka bavodos chutz. Davka kashin nimtza bachutz, וגם שם ממשיך מקדוש עליון של קודש קדושים, הרי זה רבוס וחשיב וסיסרו, ולכן צורך גם כן תפילה וקידושה. He says that, no, on a certain level, obviously the Kodesh Kedashim is the highest, most holiest place on earth. But on another level, Dafka, Avodas Chutz is a higher level. If you can take that with you, even if it's not the Kodesh Kedashim Mamish, but if you can take that with you, and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bachutz, that's amazing. And even that requires a special tefillah. Because on a certain sense, on a certain level, you are going to a very high madrega at that time. You know, there's a halacha that when we make the bari moreish after Yom Kippur, so we're supposed to do so on a ner sheshavas, on Shabbos, not necessarily on a matzah Shabbos. We're not necessarily makbid in ner sheshavas like this year, although perhaps we are. Different opinions, but on any other year when Yom Kippur doesn't come out on Shabbos. So we have to have a candle that was burning the entire Yom Kippur. So there are technical reasons for this, but I once heard a pidrush, a very nice idea. It's also a beautiful, beautiful idea. And maybe the reason why we have to have an Ersha Shavas is because the whole goal of Yom Kippur is to be able to ignite a fire within, and we have to figure out how to take that fire with us. You can't just like leave it behind. And if you just go in light a new fire on Motzi Shabbos, Motzi Yom Kippur, completely detached from the day of Yom Kippur itself, so that's not really the goal. The goal is to try to figure out, how do I take this fire that I've ignited inside of me over the past 40 days that's come to full form on Yom Kippur itself, how do I take that with me into the days ahead? So it could be, sort of in conclusion, it could be that maybe the reason why the Torah directs us to eat on Erev Yom Kippur is because the Torah wants us to realize that ultimately, however transcendent, however exalted the day of Yom Kippur it is, and undoubtedly it will be, we can't live in that bubble for all that long. And how long could a person go without eating? It's true, you can go more than one day. You can't go that much longer. So sooner or later, we're going to crash. We're going to come back down, and we're going to be reminded, because that's part of biology, that we're not angels. We're not. And we can't live in this surreal environment of Yom Kippur at all time. That doesn't mean, however, that which we've accomplished is something which cannot be sustained. Because ultimately, lo b'shamayim, the Torah is not only talking about the process of tshuva, but the goal of tshuva is not that we should live b'shamayim. The goal of tshuva is not that we should be malachim, that we should not have a yitzhahara, that we should never eat, that we should never drink, that we should never do anything which is physically pleasurable. As the Rambam teaches in Hilchos Deos, and the Mechaber stresses in Shulchan Aruch, a person has to live a life, shekol ma'asecha yud l'shem shamayim, that everything that we do should be l'shem shamayim. Even, if not especially, those things which are on the surface purely physical. Even the physical engagements of this world. Things like eating, which are normally, we see them as being separate and distinct from our avodas Hashem. Says the Rambam, even your sleep, what a powerful line. What does he say? I want to read it again. Nimsas Shena Shalo Avoda Lamakom Baruch Hu. Can you imagine? Even your sleeping is a form of avodas Hashem, says the Rambam. So maybe that's the reason why we eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And just in conclusion, because I think I have two more minutes and I'm done. And as you see, I left the entire page I didn't get to. If you want, I'm happy to share with you another time where I was going to go with this. But I just want to share with you a beautiful closing line. Really beautiful. There's a famous Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Zayin, which is found on source number 38. And for the purpose of presentation, when I did this originally, I tell the punchline until 43. But the bottom line is, the Gemara tells us the famous story of Elazar and Daria, who, suffice it to say, was a pretty bad person. He committed averus his whole life, averus chamuros, and then, at the last moments before his death, he does tshuva. And he does a very passionate tshuva, a very sincere and genuine one. And at the end of the Gemara tells us, verse number 43, Amr, he says, Inna davar tala yud bi, he cries and he dies. Yotza baskav Amr, v'loz ben adayu, mezuma l'chai elam abba. He's been admitted. Bacha Rebbe v'yamar, yesh kon olam abba b'kama sh'aminim, v'yesh kon olam abba b'shachas. Such a famous line. Yesh kon olam abba b'shachas. Rebbe cried, and he said, oh, unbelievable how one person can be kon olam in many years, and then somebody can come along and do it b'shachas. So famous question. Everybody asks on this Gemara, why did Rebbe cry? What was he crying about? So what would you say? I don't know if there is a Pashup Shah. I don't know. But what would you say is Pashup Shah? Anybody want to suggest a Pashup Shah, even though I don't think it's Pashup?
Joy.
What?
Joy.
Oh, he cried out? Oh, that's right. That's even more Pashup Shah, I was thinking. He cried out of joy. He was so happy to know that a person could be called a Lava B'Shachas. And what if Bacha means that he really cried, not tears of joy, but tears of sadness? So what people say is, he cried because, oh, it's so easy, and yet so many people don't do it. Yeah, that's. I think if there is a Pashup Shah, I think that's probably Pashup Shah, that he cried. It's unbelievable. Yesh kon olam b'shachas, and yet so many people die without doing tshuva. But if you see over here in the Sefer Likutei Torah in the bottom, source number 44, he quotes from Yaakov Yitzchak Milublin, who quotes from Rav Ber Mimezerich, the Magid Mimezerich, Shapirish. Divrei Gemara, Bachar Rebbe, V'am Yishkan Olam B'Shachas. V'dikte kalo Adirava, Hoyu lo l'smoach, Sheyichon Liknos Olam B'Shachas. He should have been happy, not sad. V'tirates, this is a profound answer. Shabachiyo hoyisa, ki ma nechshev zeh olam abba, Shekon Omas V'Shoam Oetes. Bilti has gulas mitzvos, U'masim tovim kol yomav. He says, he cried because he says, what is that worth? Shkoyach. So at the last minute, you know, you figured out some shtick, and you managed to get your way into Olam Haba. But that's not what it's all about. It's not about getting into Olam Haba. It's about the Masim Tovim of Olam Hazeh. It's about living in this world. And Rebbe cried because he felt bad for this guy. He says, it's very nice that you got in, but that it's not about being Kol Olamo Olam Haba B'Shachas. It's about living in this world. It's about not about fasting. It's about eating. Slobe Shemayim here. It's a makom, Ashata Omer love, and Moskol Yisrael. Gemach Simetova. Thank you very much for learning with me this evening, and really, it's very late at night. I very much appreciate it, and we should be zocher to all of Klal Yisrael, to Yeshuas Menachamos, Shnas Bracha V'Shalom to all of Klal Yisrael. Thank you again.
So for the beginning of the Nachminas, So it's the raisa. So regardless of the reason, so
it's true. It's true, though, if it's clear. I mean, if it's clear, actually, even if it's not, again, we're not going to tell anybody not to eat. But could we say no? Could you say that? Let's say it a little differently. It's not what's the reason for the mitzvah. If the mitzvah is really one which is part of the fast itself, so then maybe that's another way of looking at it. If you're not going to fast, so the mitzvah, the mitzvah is not independent of fasting. It's part of the mitzvah fasting. I mean, that's,
okay. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Guys,
are amazing. Well, I really do. I fall asleep when I'm speaking.
For sure, but you know, like, you have a problem.
I don't play
like
Whoa.